Loring walked out the side entrance of the Justice Department and looked for a taxi. It was nearly 5:30, a spring Friday, and the congestion in the Washington streets was awful. Loring stood by the curb and held up his left hand, hoping for the best. He was about to abandon the effort when a cab that had picked up a fare 30 feet down the block stopped in front of him.
"Going east, mister?" "It's okay. This gentleman said he wouldn't mind."
Loring was always embarrassed when these incidents occurred. He unconsciously drew back his right forearm, allowing his sleeve to cover as much of his hand as possible, to conceal the thin black chain looped around his wrist, locked to the briefcase handle.
"Thanks, anyway. I'm heading south at the next corner."
He waited until the taxi re-entered the flow of traffic and then resumed his futile signaling. Usually under such conditions, his mind was alert, his feelings competitive. He would normally dart his eyes in both directions, ferreting out cabs about to disgorge passengers, watching the corners for those dimly lit roof signs that meant this particular vehicle was for hire if you ran fast enough. Today, however, Ralph Loring did not feel like running. On this particular Friday, his mind was obsessed with a terrible reality. He had just borne witness to a man's being sentenced to death. A man he'd never met but knew a great deal about. An unknowing man of 33 who lived and worked in a small New England town 400 miles away and who had no idea of Loring's existence, much less of the Justice Department's interest in him. Loring's memory kept returning to the large conference room with the huge rectangular table around which sat the men who'd pronounced the sentence. He had objected strenuously. It was the least he could do for the man he'd never met, the man who was being maneuvered with such precision into such an untenable position. "May I remind you, Mr. Loring," said an assistant attorney general who'd once been a judge advocate in the Navy, "that in any combat situation, basic risks are assumed. A percentage of casualties is anticipated."
"The circumstances are different. This man isn't trained. You won't know who or where the enemy is. How could he? We don't know ourselves."
"Just the point." The speaker then had been another assistant AG, this one a recruit from some corporation law office, fond of committee meetings and, Loring suspected, incapable of decisions without them. "Our subject is highly mobile. Look at the psychological profile. Flawed, but mobile in the extreme." "That's exactly what it says. He's a logical choice."
"Flawed, but mobile? What in heaven's name does that mean?"
"May I remind this committee that I've worked in the field for 15 years. Psychological profiles are only screening guidelines, hit-and-miss judgments. I would no more send a man into an infiltration problem without knowing him thoroughly than I would assume the responsibility for NASA mathematics." The chairman of the committee, a career professional, had answered Loring.
"I understand your reservations. Normally, I'd agree. However, these aren't normal conditions. We have barely 3 weeks. The time factor overrides the usual precautions."
"It's the risk we have to assume," said the former judge advocate pontifically.
"You're not assuming it," Loring replied.
"Do you wish to be relieved of the contact?" The chairman made the offer in complete sincerity.
"No, sir. I'll make it. Reluctantly. I want that on the record."
"One thing before we adjourn," the corporation lawyer leaned forward on the table, "and this comes right from the top. We've all agreed that our subject is motivated. The profile makes that clear. What must also be made clear is that any assistance given this committee by the subject is given freely and on a voluntary basis. We're vulnerable here. We cannot, repeat, cannot be responsible. If it's possible, we'd like the record to indicate that the subject came to us." Ralph Loring had turned away from the man in disgust. If anything, the traffic was heavier now. Loring had made up his mind to start walking the 20-odd blocks to his apartment when a white Volvo pulled up in front of him. "Get in. You look silly with your hand up like that." "Oh, it's you. Thanks very much." Loring opened the door and slid into the small front seat, holding his briefcase on his lap. There was no need to hide the thin black chain around his wrist. Cranston was a field man, too, an overseas route specialist. Cranston had done most of the background work on the assignment, which was now Loring's responsibility. "That was a long meeting. Accomplish anything?" "The green light. It's about time. Two assistant AGs and a concerned message from the White House were responsible."